And good evening again. Isn't it great to be alive? This is the Reverend John St. Germain welcoming you to Crystal Silence League Hour, Buddhism 101, a discussion of the skandhas, and if we have time, the 12 links of dependent arising. Very excited about this topic. Last few weeks we've been discussing the Mahasatipatthana Sutta and some of the Heart Sutra, and in this we were discussing what some of the things that came up were consciousness, feelings, volition, sensation, things like this, and these were the skandhas. And it behooves me, I think, to go back, to step back and take a look at those. And also some of the things that were discussed were also the links of dependent co-arising. So we also should look at that as well. And that very thing we shall look at starting with this episode. I believe some of these discussions of Buddhism will continue through November and December. And why not? So we'll take a little brief musical interlude and grab a frosty beverage of your choice. Do find your crystal ball and have it near you, because this is indeed the Crystal Silence League Hour. And have that handy, and we'll return shortly. Back. And of course, I'm your host, John St. Germain, and this is the Crystal Silence League Hour. For those of you who may have tuned in thinking this was ESPN sports hockey talk, this is not. We won't be discussing the Rangers versus the New Jersey Devils. Sorry to disappoint you. Tonight we are discussing the skandhas and perhaps dependent co-arising, two major topics fundamental to Buddhism. Oh my goodness, are we having difficulty with sound? We should not have any difficulty with sound. Everything should be working just fine. We have a chat saying difficulty with sound. If that is the case, then we're having difficulty with Blog Talk itself. So some people may need to adjust their settings. There may be some difficulties with this. I'm just going to carry on. We'll just carry on as though things were fine. As we continue our talk on this discussion, where was I? Oh, yeah, the Crystal Silence League was founded in 1917, for those of you who may not know it. An organization founded by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon for the express purpose of disseminating positive thought and prayer to those in need, it was a necessary thing at that time. And when he passed into the silence in 1958, he took it with him until it was founded again in cybernetic form by adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church just a few years ago. And then we now have it online at www.crystalsilenceleague.org, where you can go and post prayers if you like. And we do that, hundreds and hundreds of prayers per week, some of which we'll be reading aloud in a moment. But first, we should do our Crystal of the Month, because if I don't do that first, I tend to forget it. And then our Crystal aficionados tend to freak out. So our Crystal of the Month is Cherorite. Which is a rare crystal in terms of finding it in the world. It's only found in one location along the Cherry River in Russia. And even though it's only found in one location, it's not very expensive. You can get a small crystal, about 3/4 of an inch in size, for about $4 or $5, and that's postpaid. And you can get a handful of them for about $10. It's a purpley crystal, mottled, and it is usually purple. It sometimes has other occlusions in it, depending on the purity of it. And Russia is very controlling about how much of it it lets get out, so I'm surprised that you can even get it that cheaply. You can buy big chunks of it, too, and break it up into smaller chunks if you like. But it is a grounding stone, and it can be used to help overcome obsessions and compulsions. It helps ground the spirit as opposed to the body. Being purple, it does work on the upper part of yourself, the crown chakras, the crown and third eye chakras. It can help you transform fear, and like amethyst, if you put it under your pillow at night, it can help with night terrors and nightmares, and help you sleep more deeply. It can help you if you're exhausted. It will help open your crown chakra. It can help you overcome mental problems, anxieties, things like this. So it is a very healing stone. Some of the transformative properties of it involve disorders of the crown chakra, spiritual blockage, intellectual blockage. It'll help open your mind and open your spirit. Some of the qualities of Chararite. Tonight's topic is Buddhism 101. We'll be discussing the five skandhas, and I suspect we may not have time to move on to the 12 links of dependent co-arising, but if we do, we do. But first, of course, we do our prayers. I do read aloud several prayers that are posted online. I do this anonymously. Like many places, we are anonymous. You can post your prayers online. We get hundreds of these, and I'm not exaggerating, hundreds a week. The Crystal Silence League, we provide crystals for people too, and we also have a couple of books on how the use of crystals, the use of the four branches of crystal gazing, written by our founder, Mr. Claude Conlon. And if you buy a crystal from us, $5 or more, you can have one of these books free. I think they only cost $5 anyway, but we have those, and I am still working on another book, 21st Century Crystal Gazing, for the Crystal Silence League, and I promise you that will be finished by the end of the year. So I do print out some of these prayers, and we shall start reading them. I only identify them by prayer number. I don't read names out loud. So if you just be assured your anonymity is protected. Prayer ID number 43707, and feel free to pray along with me. LF prays for herself and her baby, and prays that the father of the baby has more responsibility for the family. Prayer ID number 43706, EA, needs guidance in his spiritual life so that he can help people in their spiritual life. Prayer ID number 43705, DB, prays for a successful outcome of her works, and that she has her heart's desire, and that someone whose initial is B misses her and comes back. Prayer ID number 43704, PM, wants to be one of the top students in his or her class and excels academically. Prayer ID number 43702, prays for help for the depressed, broken, homeless, and hopes that someone whose initials is RB finds shelter and home for winter, and that all others in similar circumstances be looked after and protected. Prayer ID number 43701, MT, needs help for gastric and pancreatic distress. Prayer ID number 43700, DP, needs a new job, and a good-paying job. Prayer ID number 43699, AA, prays that he can work out difficulties with M. Prayer ID number 43698, MT, needs healing with a variety of problems, apparently has some health issues and some emotional issues, and needs help with all of those. Prayer ID number 43697, very similar things, emotional and life management issues and needs help with that. Let's go to this page. Prayer ID number 43695 JL. Needs help with a court case and prays that the judge rules in Kate's favor for the best and the safety for her and her family. Prayer ID number 43694 SG. Needs patience while she waits for her true love. Prayer ID number 43693 DP. Prays that she and her love will be reunited. Prayer ID number 43692, which is anonymous, prays for success and prosperity. And prayer ID number 43690 DB prays for love and a successful outcome of her works, and prays that her love misses her and will come back to her. Prayer ID number 43689 JK prays for the soul of a recently departed one. And prayer ID number 43688 prays for all caregivers and all those who take care of others, who takes care of sick and dying parents, and those who take care of anyone who is who gives relief from depression and sickness. Let's take a moment of silence for those who have prayed, who have submitted prayers, and also for those who need comfort. Amen. And so may it be. Our topic tonight, we're discussing some fundamentals of Buddhism. In fact, some of the very fundamentals of Buddhism, the skandhas, and also what is known as the pratyasamutpada, the links of codependent arising, or arising codependency, or co-arising dependency. In Buddhist thought, the skandhas, or khandhas, or bundles, or piles, are five aspects or functions that comprise a sentient being. Buddha taught that this is what we consist of. Now, this is not a definition of a human being. That's something that we really have to get aside right there. This is not, how do you define a sentient being? The five skandhas. That's important to know. These are the five aggregates of clinging. Buddha said that there is suffering, and suffering is caused by the five aggregates of clinging. So that's important to understand this. This is not the definition of a human being, because this is, man, if you want to see intellectual arguments, you'll see people trying to match the five aggregates to the scientific model of humanity, and trying to fit them together like jigsaw puzzles, and this will really mislead you, and you'll waste a lot of time. These are the five aggregates of clinging. And in the Theravada tradition, suffering arises when you identify or cling to an aggregate, and suffering is extinguished by relinquishing your attachment or clinging to the aggregate. It's as simple as that. That's what the aggregates are for. The Mahayana tradition puts a little more emphasis on deep penetration by contemplation, by meditation, on the nature of the emptiness or lack of independent existence of the aggregates. In Theravada tradition, there is sunyata, or emptiness. But boy, I tell you, the Mahayana is really going to that nature of the emptiness. Now, last week we looked at the Heart Sutra, and the Heart Sutra, I'll remind you of it. It's very short, and the Heart Sutra is from the Mahayana tradition, and we looked at that again, and basically it said, Avalokitesvara, while practicing deeply with the insight that brings us into the other side, brings us to the other shore, suddenly discovered that all of the five skandhas are equally empty. And with this realization, he overcame all suffering. Listen, Sariputra, this body itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is the body. This body is not other than emptiness, and emptiness is not other than this body. The same is true of feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Those are the skandhas. And he goes on to say, listen, Sariputra, all phenomena bear this mark of emptiness. Their true nature is the nature of no birth, no death, no being or non-being, no defilement, no purity, no increasing, no decreasing. And the Heart Sutra goes on. That is why in emptiness, body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness, there are not separate self-entities. The 18 realms of phenomena, which are the six sense organs, the six sense objects, and the six consciousnesses, are also separate, not separate sense entities. The 12 links of interdependent arising and their extinction are also not separate self-entities. Ill-being, the causes of ill-being, the end of ill-being, the path, insight, and attainment, also not self-entities. Whoever can see this no longer need anything to attain. Bodhisattvas who practice the insight that brings us to the other shore see no more obstacles in their mind, and because there are no more obstacles in their mind, they can overcome all fear, destroy all wrong perceptions, and realize perfect nirvana. All Buddhas in the past, present, and future, by practicing the insight that brings us to the other shore, are all capable of attaining authentic and perfect enlightenment. Therefore, Sariputra, it should be known that the insight that brings us to the other shore is a great mantra, the most illuminating mantra, the highest mantra, a mantra beyond compare, the true wisdom that has the power to put an end to all kinds of suffering. Therefore, let us proclaim a mantra to praise the insight that brings us to the other shore. Gate garte paragate parasamgarte bodhisarva. Garte garte paragate parasamgarte bodhisarva. Garte garte paragate parasamgarte bodhisarva. And that is the Heart Sutra. And as you can see, it proclaims the emptiness of all the skandhas. Now, this idea of emptiness or skandha of or sunyata does not mean that the skandhas don't exist. That is not what emptiness means. Emptiness is not oblivion. Emptiness means that there's a lack of self nature, and this is what you find out through contemplation, that the aggregates is no place to land self. That's not where you launch the whole idea of self. So when you consider the five aggregates arise and cease within your moment-by-moment experience, Buddha taught that nothing among any of these can be seen as I or me or mine. In other words, you can't really cling to them. You can't say, there I am. There I am. That's mine. Therefore, the material form, the body, is not I. Obviously, that's not I. Feelings, they come and go. That's not I. Perception, volition, and sensory consciousness, none of that can be found I. However, all of them working together create a functional process that is the sentient being. So to say that there is no self is wrong. It's just wrong. Obviously you exist. But the self is a functional creation of the skandhas. But there is not in the skandhas any self. You cannot take the skandhas away and there's a self standing there, independent of the skandhas. The self is a functional process that arises from the skandhas. So clinging to the idea of self is clinging to basically a ghost that's telling a fairy tale to his imaginary friend. I made that up myself. So what we're looking at are these five skandhas, and through meditation, which we discussed in the very densely packed Maha Satipatthana Sutra, is an awareness of the skandhas and the empty nature of each. So the word skandha means, back in Sanskrit and Pali, heap, mass, pile, bundle, or even tree trunk. So Buddha gave it a new meaning. It's a bundle. So here are the five skandhas and what they mean. You have form or matter, and this is external and internal matter, and it's called rupa, which is the physical world. So that's the physical body and the physical sense organs. Then you have sensation or feeling, and feeling can be three things: pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. That's feeling. Sensation or feeling. Then there's perception. Perception is, we discussed that one time, it's memory, it's recognition. Now, it's recognition. For instance, the first time you see an object, you don't know what it is, so you conduct an investigation. Let's say you see a snake, and you go, "My goodness, what's that?" Well, then you determine that the snake is dangerous. Next time you see a snake, you go, "Oh my gosh, that's a snake, it's dangerous." Or you see a chocolate chip cookie and you don't know what it is, so you make an investigation with your senses, and you say, I smell it, it smells good, I taste it, it tastes good, I like the texture, I like cookies. And so the next time you see a cookie, perception has marked it and stored these characteristics, and you don't have to do that investigation anymore. You go, "Cookie, I remember that, cookie, I like it." Now, it may have been a chocolate chip cookie, so then you come across an oatmeal raisin cookie, and you go, "That's similar to that other cookie," and you might have to add other details. Now you know two different types of cookie. Perception has marked it. That's what perception does. Now we come across volition, or mental formations. These are all types of mental habits. They can be thoughts, ideas, opinions, prejudices, compulsions, decisions that are always linked to an object. These can be thought objects or other objects, but whenever you think a thought, whenever there's something you see, hear, experience, these volitional objects appear. And these are mental habits, and they can build up over time. They can build up over lifetimes. There can be the weight of volitional objects that are karmic, that build up over lifetimes. And for instance, if you see that cookie and you don't like it, that is volition. That's a volitional act. Consciousness is that which discerns, that which cogitates, that which discerns. And consciousness can mean a number of things in Buddhism. It is discernment. It is that which discerns. It can also mean a series of rapidly changing acts of consciousness. And I'm going to tell you that there are sense consciousnesses associated with every sense, and there are six senses. Five of those senses are physical, one is mental. So consciousness, that which discerns. Now, these aggregates arise in a progressive fashion, form to feeling to perception to mental formations to consciousness. They have to arise in that order. Now, examination of the aggregates has a critical role in Buddhism. It's a critical role because to understand suffering, to understand dukkha, to understand the unsatisfactoriness of nature, the five aggregates are essential in our experience of life and our experience of this unsatisfactoriness. In the idea of dukkha, which is the word for suffering, you know, there's dukkha and sukha. There's unpleasantness, which is dukkha, and sukha, which is pleasantness. Since all the Four Noble Truths revolve around the truth of suffering, understanding suffering, why suffering arises, and how to get rid of it, understanding the aggregates is essential for understanding the Four Noble Truths. Now, I want to tell you that there's some Neo-Buddhists, that disagree with this, that say you don't have to understand this. There's a lot of ideas in neo-Buddhism, you know, the modern Buddhists, you know, you can get on the internet and read these discussions, but it's not what Buddha taught. If you want to learn it the way Buddha taught it, this is how it was taught. Release from the suffering world, samsara it's called, the world in which we're born, must be accomplished by releasing the clinging to the five aggregates. Clinging to the five aggregates must be removed in order to achieve nirvana. That is how you achieve nirvana. You release clinging to the aggregates. So to understand this, we look at a sutta called the Dhamma Kapapavanatana Sutta. He elaborates this. Buddha disgorges and dissects the first noble truth, and he says, "What is the first noble truth?" And he says, "The first noble truth, monks, is this: birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering. Association with the pleasant is suffering, or association with the unpleasant is suffering. Disassociation from the pleasant is suffering. Not to receive what one desires is suffering. In brief, the five aggregates subject to grasping are suffering." Now, there's another long discussion called the Book of Aggregates, which is called the Khandavaga, the Book of Aggregates, which is a text that compiles over 100 suttas related to the five aggregates. That's how important it is. There's one called the agitation through clinging to the skandhas discourse, and where Buddha says, "The instructed noble disciple does not regard form or other aggregates as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. That form of his changes and alters. Despite the change and alteration of form, his consciousness does not become preoccupied with the change of form. Through non-clinging, he does not become agitated." Now, what he's talking about there is your body changes. There's a time in your life when your body's at its peak, when you're young, full of energy, full of piss and vinegar. You feel great, but over time, your body changes. You become like an old car. You know, you rust, your bumper falls off, your wheels flatten. And this creates a great deal of agitation and suffering and fear and anxiety. But to the instructed noble disciple, it does not. He's not attached to form. Now, there's another sutta I really like called the Fina Sutta, where he compares form to a magic trick. And he does. He says form is like a magic trick. He said a man of discernment can see a magician performing a magic trick and see that it's empty. It's an illusion. It's devoid of meaning. He said, so how can a man of discernment see anything worth paying attention to in a magic trick? He said, that's the way the form is. How can anybody see anything worth paying attention to form? And he says, consciousness is like a foam, like this is, he said, this is there a foam on a river, empty of form. A foam bubble on a river is empty of form. So is consciousness like foam on a river? He said, how can anyone pay attention to consciousness? It's like a foam bubble. So all form is comparable to foam. All feelings to bubbles. All sensations are like mirages. All mental formations are like an empty stalk. Consciousness, an illusion. That's how Buddha compared the aggregates. These things that we think are so important, they're like bubbles of foam on the river. They're like a conjurer's magic trick. They're like a mirage. They're empty of true meaning. They're not worthy of clinging to. This is why it's very important to understand the nature of the skandhas. Now, hearing this, there's a tendency toward a kind of anxiety. There's a name for it, and I can never remember it, but I think of it as sunyata anxiety. When you start to, it's like, I think of like the coyote when he walks out over the cliff, and there's a moment where he's standing on thin air, and he looks down and realizes he's standing on emptiness, and he gets this look on his face of sheer horror, and then he drops. Sometimes when you meditate and you don't have a teacher, or you don't have a good teacher, and you become aware of this lack of intrinsic self, there's this moment of panic, and your mind veers away from it. But this is not a terrible realization. This is the realization that sets us free, you see. What's terrifying is the idea that this is all we have, these five skandhas, that this is all there is. That's what's terrifying, that we cling to these things, this decaying body, the decaying mind, the decaying senses, the decaying consciousness, the decaying feelings. That's what's terrifying, that that's all there is. We chase after illusionary happiness, and paradoxically, the more you chase it, the more it runs away. And also paradoxically, when you let go of all that, you develop a almost supernatural sense of peace. Now, let's talk about sunyata, this emptiness. The aggregates themselves don't constitute any essence or self-nature. And the biggest similarity to that in both Theravada and Mahayana nature is the simile of the chariot. A chariot exists because of its parts. And that's the way the being exists. If you take a chariot apart, you take, and let's instead of a chariot, let's say a car. You have this thing called a car, but if you took it apart, if you took it into pieces, you'd have a pile of junk. You don't see any car in any of the parts. If you took the engine apart, you took the body apart, you took everything apart, you'd have a pile of junk. Nowhere in there could you look at that pile of junk and see car. There's no carness, no car nature in any of those parts. So that's how the skandhas are. There's nothing in any of the skandhas that says person or being or you, you know, John. You know, John or Mike or Phil. Nothing in there says that. But you put them together, and voila, you've got a car, you've got a table, you've got you, you got me. And this is not an exercise in philosophy. This is reality. It's a caution. It's a caution against theorizing. It's a caution against thinking of reality as conceptual. And it's Buddha's way of letting you know that this type of philosophical meandering that we love to do about the nature of humans and the nature of the cosmos and the ontology and theology and stuff, it's a waste of time, and it creates a great deal of anxiety. The whole idea of pronouns and nouns, very misleading. I, me, you, mine, yours, theirs, very misleading. And not only that, damaging. Damaging. This is mine. I'll kill you for it. This is mine. That's yours. You stay over there. This is my country. This is my God. This is my property. That's yours. Mine is better than yours. Mine is mine and yours is yours. Now, so what happens when you abandon this clinging? What happens when you no longer have a concept of mine or me or I? You become an arahant. You become an enlightened being. And an arahant or a tathagata is called a thus gone one, one who has gone beyond. An arahant has abandoned this clinging. They have lost self-view. And there's a change in personality that unbinds the mind. The mind is like fire unbound, it is said. And the mind is no longer measurable. It's no longer quantifiable. It's freed. And strictly speaking, an arahant is no longer a human being. They're not like you and I. The skandhas have been seen to be a burden, and the enlightened individual is one with burden dropped. Now, there's no description other than negation about what it's like to be enlightened. There's no description of saying this is what it is to be enlightened. There's more like It is the goal. It is the desired state. It is the unburdening. It is the freedom. It is the liberation. It is the letting go of fetters. It is the letting go of misery. It is the letting go of suffering. There's nothing that says exactly what it is because it's beyond conditions. It is the unconditioned state. There are no conditions. Everything in reality is conditioned except the mind of an arhat. Nirvana is unconditioned. Everything else arises from conditions. It's compared this compared to that. Good versus bad. Up versus down. But the mind of the arhat that dwells in nirvana is unconditioned. And you can't even conceive of that. I can't even conceive of it because our minds are conditioned. We think in terms of nouns and verbs. Now, we go from there into an understanding of the way it's described in Buddhist psychology or Abhidharma, advanced Abhidharma. Some very advanced discussions of the six consciousnesses, because there's a coming together of these consciousnesses that create our perception of reality. All we know about reality is how we experience it through our senses and our sense consciousness. So as a alternative to the aggregates, the six sense bases can also be looked at. If you look at form, feeling, perception, formation, and consciousnesses, remember there are six sense consciousness. There are five that are physical and one that's mental. Because the mind is seen as a sense organ and it senses mental objects, which are thoughts. Now, the coming together of an object and a sense organ results in the arising of the corresponding consciousness. I'll go into that. The let's say the eye. There's the eye. That's the sense organ. The eye is touched upon by an object. It sees, in other words, a brick. The brick is the sense object, the visual object. The eye sees it. It does not perceive it. The eye is the sense gate. The eye sees it. Then this leads the consciousness, remember that which cognizes, the brick. So there's the three things, the sense object, which is the brick, the sense organ, or the sense gate, which is the eye, then the arising of the sense consciousness, which is now aware of the brick. Now, that arising from consciousness comes the mental formations concerning the brick. That brick is red. It's I like the brick. It's hard. It's red. It's hard. It's rough. I like the brick. I can do things with it. I can build a house with it. Perception then comes in and marks it and remarks it and stores it. You see how that whole process works? Now, the concurrence of this object, its sense organ, and the related consciousness is called contact. From the contact of the form and consciousness arise three aggregates, feeling, perception, and mental formation. You see that? From the contact of form and consciousness arise the contact, and then feeling, perception, and mental formation occurs. Now, these mental aggregates can then in turn give rise to additional consciousnesses of mental aggregates, and there are these things called cittas and cittasikas that are types of mental formations. And if you really want to get into those, you can get you the Comprehensive Manual of Abhidharma, and they're all listed out, and there's 52 cittasikas. It tells you all the different types of mental formations that can arise with the contact of with this type of contact. I'm serious. Every type of mental formation that can arise in your mind, greed, envy, jealousy, aversion, hostility, every type. And I believe that there is a list of 52 of these mental formations that can arise from the contact. isn't this something? And this is something that happened 500 BCE. The Comprehensive Manual of Abhidharma. These were the teachings. This is how thoroughly the mind was dissected by early Buddhists. So we know that these mental aggregates and consciousnesses are mutually dependent. One can't exist without the other. And if you want to get very explicit about it, you can get into the 12 sense bases. And we won't, but I'll tell you that there's the five external sense bases, which is touch, sound, smell, taste, form, or the form aggregates. The mental sense objects overlap that, and the five internal sense bases, which are eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, overlap that, and the mental sense organ, which is mind, overlaps those, and they interact. They're all dependent on each other, and it's a very beautiful system. Now, there are other systems, and there are other ways of looking at it, and understand that these are not scientific models. These are ways of investigating reality. These are ways of investigating our experience of reality. This is not physics. And if you try to look at it as physics, you're going to get confused, and you're going to say, well, that doesn't agree with string theory. That doesn't agree with quantum theory. Although, actually, there's a lot in the Abhidharma that does. Buddha talked about world cycles where the universe expands and contracts. He also describes evolution at some point. Now, we'll go into that at some future show. But these are ways of investigating experiential reality that is designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to free us from the cycle of suffering. Let's take a break, digest that a little bit, have a cold drink, and we'll get a word from our sponsor.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays feature two wonderful shows to suit your taste. On the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance and tips on the practical use of crystals and crystal balls. His show starts at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and lasts for 1 hour. Next is In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, Kai Armand broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times, comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Saturday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back. I am the Right Reverend John St. Germain, a multicultural teacher of all things spiritual. And tonight we're discussing the skandhas and dependent origination, sometimes known as dependent arising, interdependent co-arising, conditioned arising, or as it is known among the geekiest of the Buddhists, Patikasamupodada. And it is a difficult and strange teaching, and I think we'll start talking about that. There are many, in Sanskrit, it's Pratiti Samuppada. It is commonly translated as dependent origination or dependent co-arising. And the basic law, which Buddha stated, was that all dharmas arise in dependence upon other dharmas. Dharma meaning thing. All things arise in dependence upon other things. Nothing can exist except in dependence of other things. Everything is interconnected. All things are interconnected. And if this exists, that exists. If this ceases to exist, that also ceases to exist. A very, very logical thinking. It's applied to all things. And when applied to dukkha, and the cessation of dukkha, you get the Four Noble Truths. This is suffering. This is the cause of suffering. If you remove the cause of suffering, then suffering ceases to exist. And from this, Buddha saw and intuited and observed directly the 12 links of dependent origination, which describes, and this is a wonderful thing, it makes the hair of my arm stand up here when I think about it, the chain of causes which result in rebirth. And I always love this when people say, well, I don't believe in rebirth. Well, you know, okay, great. You know, you don't believe in gravity either, I guess. You know, because rebirth happens every moment. The rebirth of consciousness happens every moment. Every moment we are reborn. We are not the same person we were a moment ago. We're not the same. This is what we mean by rebirth in Buddhism. Every moment, you know, you're not the same person you were a year ago. If you were to take the person you were at, let's say we had this marvelous time machine, and we could take you at 16 months and sit you next to you now and go in the future and take you at 93 and put the three of you next to each other. Are you the same person? Well, are you, or are you a different person? Well, all of that's true. You're obviously not the same person, but you're not a different person. You're three separate links in a chain of dependent origination. You're three different persons. You're three different links in the chain of codependent arising. If you take an acorn, an oak tree, and a pencil case made of walnut, or a pencil case made of oak, those are the same thing at different points in that tree's life. They're the same. They're the same thing. The acorn, the oak tree, and the pencil case, if you pointed those and say those are all the same thing, somebody would think you were crazy if they did not know the history of the oak tree. You see, they're all different links on the chain of dependent arising or codependent origination or dependent co-arising. Pratyasamutapada. It's a wonderful thing. So this thing that we call a life, from birth to death, is just a link in a chain that goes back to, as Buddha called, beginningless time. It's always been here. We've always done it. You tell me you don't believe in rebirth, you know, that's fine. You know, you think that you began at the birth of your body and you'll end at the death of your body, that, you know, you're welcome to believe that. But it's absurd. It's absurd. And it's absurd. You know, I'm sorry. I just, you know, it's naive. But, you know, that, whatever. You go, well, I'm entitled to my belief. Yes, you are. You sure are. Like I say, you don't believe in gravity either. But, you know, we'll go on, and where are my notes? There are my notes. Sometimes there's the 12 nadanas, which is a 12-fold chain that describes the chain of rebirth. We'll go on this, and as we said, the whole thing is that Buddha said, this is because that is, and this is not because that is not. If this ceases to be, that's because that ceases to be. Nothing can just go away. It's got to go away because something else has gone away, and nothing can come into being on its own. It's got to because something else comes into being. In other words, you didn't just happen. Conditions had to occur to bring you into being. And in Buddhism, three things have to be present for you to happen: the seed from your father, the egg from your mother, and the consciousness from a previous being. Otherwise, it can't happen. Awareness cannot arise from inert matter. Consciousness, which is aware, cannot arise from matter, which is not aware. That's just, you know, an axiom in Buddhism. So consciousness, for us to be aware, consciousness has to come from a previous being, and that's where it comes from. So the Four Noble Truths are an expression that arose from the principle of dependent origination. The Four Noble Truths explain the arising of dukkha, which is dependently originated, and the cessation of dukkha by removing the causes. It also explains the concept of karma, that of individual actions and their fruits. Karma is not the fruit of karma, like it is in, you know, a lot of people say, you know, karma, you know, that's karma when something happens. Karma is the action. The fruit of karma is called vipaka. So that's important to get in mind. Every fruition is said to depend upon multiple causes and condition. So it basically, if something good happens, that's the fruiting of multiple conditions. That's the fruiting of karma. If something bad happens, let's say, that too is the fruiting of karma. It's not that simple, though. Karma is not the only thing that causes stuff. Okay, there are five orders or niyamas. We'll get into that one time, that causes stuff. But karma does cause things. But if you remove the causes, if you remove karma, then you remove the fruits of karma, and that can happen. So here are the 12 nadanas, a series of causal links that describe the process of rebirth, what makes us come into this world. And the reason the Buddha appeared in this realm, this human realm, because there's a lot of ways you can be reborn. There's a lot of places you can be reborn in Buddhist belief, lots of realms. He appeared in this one because of several reasons. One, this realm sucks. This is a very unsatisfactory realm. But it's also one of the few realms where you actually have choice. We can choose to be self-indulgent pricks, or we can choose to rise above it and become noble. Animals can't do that. I don't care. You know, a lot of people are very romantic about animals. They think animals are naive and innocent and stuff. No, not really. Animals are animals. They're instinctive creatures. And animals can't become enlightened. Animals can't become enlightened. Plants don't have consciousness. You know, plant consciousness is a myth. I don't care what you think. Trees, flowers are not sentient. They react to their environment. That may be a form of low-level consciousness, but they're not sentient. Okay, you know, if you're telling me you're having intelligent conversations with a plant, okay, you know, whatever. But you cannot be, in other words, humans cannot be reborn as plants. Humans can be reborn as animals. Devas, which are kind of like angelic beings, heavenly beings, hell beings, lots of stuff. But human rebirth is very rare. It's the only it's the only place where we can act, where we have volition, where we can be, we can choose to be evil or good. So in the Theravada tradition, it's taught that you got to have several causes to get several results, and it's fundamental that a single cause cannot give rise to a single result or several results, and several results don't give rise to just one result. You got to have several causes to give rise to several results. It's cumulative. So here we go. Now, understand too that these 12 links are interconnected. They are very they're cyclic. They continue over and over and over. One will lead to the next, and one will lead to the other. And if you can break any one of them, the entire chain breaks. And that's what's very cool about it. You break any one of them, the whole chain breaks, and rebirth ends. Now, why is that important? Well, rebirth is a cycle of suffering, and you really don't want to come back. You really don't. So here are the links. The first link is ignorance. We're ignorant of the true nature of the world, and from ignorance comes volitional formations. That's those mental habits we have. From mental formations, consciousness arises from mind and body. Mind and body arise from the six sense spheres. Six sense spheres, contact, feeling. Feeling arises from craving. Craving arises from grasping. Grasping arises from becoming. Becoming arises from birth. Birth arises from aging and death. And there they are. And this is what the Buddha had to say about it. And we're definitely going to we only have 3 minutes. We're definitely going to have to continue this next time. Buddha said, profound ananda. Profound ananda is the dependent arising, and it appears profound. It is, though not understanding, not penetrating this law, that the world resembles a tangled skein of thread, a woven nest of birds, a thicket of bamboo and reeds, that man does not escape from birth in the lower realms of existence from the state of woe and perdition, and suffers from the round of rebirth. And this not understanding of dependent arising is the root of all sorrows of all beings. It is also the most important of the formulations of Buddha's enlightenment. For a Buddhist, it's therefore very necessary to see the heart of this for yourself. Not because I tell it to you, not because Buddha tells it to you, but you got to see it for yourself. And you can't do that by reading about it or hearing about it. You got to see it for yourself. And Buddha said, he who sees dependent arising sees the Dharma. And that first link is ignorance, which in Pali is avijja. And this is represented by a blind person stumbling forward. Ignorance is basically not seeing. It's a lack of reality into the nature of reality. It's a lack of understanding how reality works. And avijja means, av is always not. Vijja is seeing, not knowing. Not knowing anything, it just means incomplete knowing. So it's a very special kind of not knowing. And we don't know the truth about the Four Noble Truths. We don't know the truth about dukkha. So we cannot destroy the cause of dukkha. We do not understand that we mistake the lovely for the unlovely. We mistake the permanent for the impermanent. And we mistake self for not self. So we'll pick this up again next week, because we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the Buddha's teachings, the 12 links of dependent origination. And if we can penetrate this, my friends, perhaps we can achieve enlightenment together. I am John St. Germain. This is the... what is the show? This is the Crystal Silence League Hour, and I think coming up next is In the Streets of Beverly Smith, so stay tuned for that, and it's my pleasure to bring you this stuff. Let's go out with a little meditation music, and I'll see you next week.